Welcome to Wampum.Codes. I'm your host, Amelia Winger-Bearskin. Wampum.Codes is brought to you with generous support from the Mozilla Foundation. On this podcast, I interview Indigenous and Native people who are artists, filmmakers, directors, comedians, writers, VR directors, technologists, coders, inventors, and a lot of other fun things, all around cool people. Today, I have a really good friend with me, Joey, and I will let him introduce himself.
Hey, my name is Joey Clift. I'm a comedy writer based out of Los Angeles and an enrolled member of the Cowlitz Indian tribe. I would say hello in my native language, but my Cowlitz dictionary is across the room and just out of my reach.
That's very fair. That's awesome that you, you know, you have one. I have a PDF on my phone.
Oh, neat. Yeah. Actually, is this just like native question? Is this like... For the PDF, is it like, are only members of your tribe allowed to have it? Can anybody get it?
I mean, there's definitely lots of different ones. Like there's this really, really old one that is just past its copyright. And so it's on, you know, it's like a PDF that anyone can download it if they Google, you know, Seneca language. But then we have, I don't know, there's so many different speakers. Like obviously Erica is now at the Six Nations School in...
Right.
Studying there, and they have, you know, all these language programs and software and, you know, all that kind of cool stuff. So
I'm not sure if it's still the case, but like I bought the Cowlitz dictionary that I bought. I definitely heard for a while that it's something that like only tribal members could buy, and like it was like a big thing, and it's like sort of like, no, don't leak it to outsiders or whatever. And but like when I bought it, I don't even think that they checked my tribal ID.
That's really cool. It's like a decoder ring, you know?
Yeah. So I guess what I'm saying is that if you wanted to go to the Cowlitz office and buy a Cowlitz dictionary, you'd probably get away with it if you were Cowlitz. Don't tell them I gave you that tip. Don't tell them this. Don't tell them that you're me. I might get in trouble.
Well, or just everyone be you, and then everyone will definitely know what's going on. They'll have to get a whole new dictionary. Just there's the Joey version of our language that's not approved, you know?
Right. Yes.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I mean, a lot of tribes have like apps and stuff now too, where it'll like, you know, you can like type in, or you can click a image or take an image of something, and then through computer vision, it'll tell you the word in your language. Like there's lots of different, software out there, I guess.
That's something that, I guess, to continue a conversation that you had on the first episode of this show, like, I think that that's something that, my tribe, we built our first kind of big casino a couple of years ago. And I remember like when we started kind of planning for it, I was originally like, you know, one of those people that was like, oh, great, you know, our tribe's got a casino. It's the thing that all tribes have or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but yeah, I mean, that's not true, because really like only kind of top 1% tribes have casinos. But then like, I guess I just started to realize like that the economic benefit that a casino brings to a tribe allows tribes to be able to afford, like, you know, like apps and things like that for language revitalization. Like I'm Cowlitz, but I grew up on the Tulalip Reservation, which is, Cowlitz is like southern Washington. The Tulalip Reservation is like kind of like mid north of Seattle a little bit. And like that tribe's doing pretty well. So like they have like, you know, free classes in Lachute Seed and stuff like that. That it's just like, oh, them doing well financially directly ties to them being able to preserve their culture. So, you know, now I've flipped and like, I don't know, if your tribe's got a casino, that's amazing. I love that. No shade of casinos, you know?
Well, and also I kind of want to, like, I love the way that Asha was talking about just reclaiming the casino as being like, yeah, it's our version of like, you know, entertainment mall slash, you know, Deep Space Nine, everything. And I'm like, yes, that would be amazing. I want them to be like VR Hollow Suites, everything.
Oh yeah. Well, like my tribe's casino, it's called Alani. It's about 20 minutes north of Portland. And now at a point where like, just because my tribe has a casino, whenever I'm on podcasts and people ask me to promote stuff at the end, I always just promote my tribe's casino.
That's so rad.
Because I'm just like, I guess that as a member of the tribe, I own part of that casino. So it feels like I'm like a local business owner that's just like, hey, everybody, buy a car from my car lot.
But I mean, but the real question is, do you have a set that you do at the casino? Can we see you every Friday at the casino?
My tribe is very nice. And like, yeah. I emailed them asking some questions about like, I had like kind of a satire book that that I wrote that like my mom actually illustrated, that I was trying to see if like they would stock in the Cowlitz gift shop. And like when I emailed the tribe that, they emailed me and they were like, oh, also, if you want to do like a show at our on our huge, you know, auditorium, like you can do it. And I'm like, oh, I'm like more of a writer, so I don't necessarily have like an hour worth of stand-up in my back pocket, but like that they offered is very delightful.
That is very cool. No, I mean, I feel like the first time my boyfriend ever went to a casino on a reservation is he was working the tour for Chris Rock, and he does a bunch of, native casinos. And I'm like, wow, that's really cool. I mean, yeah, it's like huge, they have huge, stadiums and all that. And that's really awesome. So maybe someday we'll get to see you at your casino
I mean, I
doing
wanted.
something, maybe, having a meetup for cat lover. I don't, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to, I like it's definitely on my to-do list. It's like I guess that I'm a writer performer, but like leaning really hard toward writer, but it's like, oh, I could probably put like, you know, if I worked at it for a little bit, I could probably put like an hour worth of storytelling together or something. Really just as an excuse to like do it at my tribe's
Oh
casino.
yeah, that would be awesome.
Or like I don't have any I don't have like a podcast of my own right now, but like I guest on a lot of people's podcasts and a lot of those podcasts do tours and it's like, oh, I could probably get like, you know, I could probably get a podcast that I guest on all the time that like, you know, does a tour of Portland to just like do their Portland stop at my tribe's casino. Like that's
Oh
probably and
yeah.
like I could guest on it or whatever, you know.
Absolutely. Can you also have like your Netflix special be from your casino? Because that would be amazing. Like
Oh, that would
I
be the dream.
yes, that is the dream. That would be so rad. Yeah. And then they could just be a thing that like all native comedians, like, they do their Netflix special from their tribe's casino, because that would just be rad.
Oh yeah, totally. That would be awesome. I would love that.
That's great. Yeah, so I would love to talk to you about some of the awesome things that you're up to. I know all of us are like ebbing and flowing in the state of quarantine here, and so we have like really cool projects that we're stopping, and then we have other projects that we like. For myself, for this podcast, I've been able to get lots of people on board this week. Whereas I was like usually scheduling out for a couple months because everyone was touring and being so busy. So I'd love to hear a couple of things of what you're up to right now.
Okay, I mean, besides like I don't know, like hoarding toilet paper in my apartment.
I mean, obviously, granted.
What am I up to? I mean, the entertainment industry is in definitely like this weird kind of holding pattern right now. Like up until about a week ago, I was a staff writer on a kind of a show for a streaming service that was kind of like a daily comedy show, and like that's kind of, you know, that's kind of on hold as of, you know, a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
And then other than that, you know, I mean, it's tough to say necessarily, like, I've got a bunch of projects in the ether, but those are all kind of like on hold because of this stuff. Like, I had a lot of like meetings and stuff scheduled this week that they were definitely like, hey, let's do this meeting, maybe after the world comes back online.
Right.
To fill my time right now, basically, I'm somebody that like I really like to kind of bury myself in comedy bits. So like I like to keep busy. I got an idea about 5 years ago that I wanted to. Do you know who Sufjan Stevens is?
Yeah.
So he's for those of you listening that don't know who he is, he's a folk musician who was like really popular in like the mid 2000s, and he's still pretty popular. And he basically said in the 2000s that he was going to do a different album of music for every state, so every state in the U.S. in the U.S. Union, so 50 albums for 50 states. He, you know, kind of laid that gauntlet down. People were really excited about it. It was a really big thing. He released two albums. I think it was one for Minnesota and one for Illinois. And then people started to realize, oh, it's taking him like 4 years between albums. So like he's probably so it would take him hundreds of years to do that at this pace. And then people got really mad at him because they're like, you're not going to finish this project. And then he like finally basically said like, okay, it was all a joke. I'm not really going to do it. I regret saying I was going to do it. Sorry, everybody. And the internet got really mad at him. So this was, and like pretty much since then, I've thought, oh, I have no musical ability, but that would be really funny if I like tried to finish his 50 States project. So,
Absolutely.
and it's a bit that like I've been kind of like slowly planning on doing for the past couple of years, just kind of waiting for the right time to do it. And I've realized, I mean, exactly what you said. It's like all of a sudden, a lot of funny comedians and musicians just have nothing to do right now. So I just posted on Twitter like yesterday, basically, that like anybody that wants to participate in this album, please email me at, you know, an email address that I built. And then my yesterday was basically spent sending out 250 organizational emails to like a couple hundred people that reached out to me that they wanted to write songs for this 50 states project. So like, I don't know, what I'm working on right now is, I guess, producing 50 music albums.
Yes, that's amazing. Of course, you know, like, I did not email you yesterday, but of course I would like to write a song for one of your albums, especially one of the underloved ones. Like, you know, give me a really weird one. I'm happy, especially Oklahoma, obviously.
I think I don't think Oklahoma has any pitches. It's like, it kind of is going as you'd expect, where it's like California, like I've got enough for an album for California of people claiming pitches. Weirdly, like, somebody emailed me and they just said, hey, I just have like a singer-songwriter album about Kentucky that I haven't released. Do you want to add that to this?
Amazing.
And I'm like, great. Check. So great, check. Kentucky's taken care of. Awesome.
So good.
And I've opened it up to like territories. So it's like, I want there to be like an EP about Puerto Rico. I was like, somebody should do one about the moon. So like a bunch of people have sent me pitches for like the moon album.
Oh, so good.
So, you know, maybe I'm Icarus flying too close to the sun on this, or maybe this is the work I will bury myself with for the next 2 weeks. Who knows?
I mean, I hope it happens really fast and then you make some kind of crazy documentary about like the process of making 50 albums at once in 2 weeks. This is great. I love it. And I feel like I was just talking about his work like a couple of weeks ago. I feel like it's in the ether. We're all like, wow, how do we feel about America? Oh, there's once a guy that wanted to tell us how he felt about America, which is awesome.
So yeah, I mean, that's like, you know, that's the thing I'm kind of frittering my time away for the next little bit. I feel like the documentary would be boring because it's a lot of just me replying to emails and
no,
like,
that's amazing, actually.
Putting stuff into an Excel spreadsheet.
Where is that documentary though? I mean, really, like,
you're right,
hashtag relatable.
And then I'm trying to think of like other, I might as well plug this because you're participating in it. But you know, before the coronavirus, the comedian Tig Notaro, she's a super funny comedian. She's got like Netflix specials and stuff. She's done a thing for years where she's basically like, she's every day she's given her Twitter account over to a different comedian. And a little bit ago, I just tweeted at her basically to say like, hey, you know, you should use your account. It would be cool if you used your account to like boost up Native Voices. And she got back to me and said, oh, that's perfect. I would love that. So for the month of March, so, you know, this month as we're recording, when this is released, this is probably gonna be last month. But I put together a list of 22 Native comedians to basically take over her account for this month. Amelia is one of them. So that's, I'm very excited about that. And, you know, so that's, I've also just been kind of like coordinating that behind the scenes, making sure that people get like logins and stuff like that for the past, you know, little bit. So I feel like those are my two big things. I feel like my literary manager would be happier if I spent this time writing a pilot or something. But
hey, you know, you can do that while you're producing 50 albums. I mean,
that's kind of, that's kind of, I feel like I do a lot of this stuff where I don't tell her in advance that I'm doing it. I'll just like, I'll tell her as a like, hey, so here's the thing that I was doing instead of hitting that deadline I said I would hit.
That's great.
And that's go ahead. I mean, that's something I'm sure that like you've noticed in this time is like, it's like, I feel like all of us, you know, this is like a weird and scary time right now. And like, especially for creatives, it's like, we need stuff to kind of distract ourselves from, you know, watching the news.
Oh my God.
So that's also like kind of why I like doing these big kind of comedy public works projects that involve hundreds of people, is it's just like, oh, it's fun for me to do and it keeps me distracted. But also like by telling somebody that they've got a weekend to write a song about like the Kentucky Derby or whatever, it's like, you know, oh, that keeps them busy for a weekend and keeps them not thinking about stuff, you know?
Yeah, but you know, it seems like it's been part of your practice for a while now, or at least like a core part. You know, I'm thinking of the Facebook group that you have that's Comedians with Cats, the largest Facebook community for comedians with cats. Is that correct?
I feel like probably it's it's probably just for context. I created a Facebook group called the LA Underground Cat Network. It's just a Facebook group for comedians to share pictures of their cats. It has like 12,000 members.
Yeah.
It's delightful. You should join it. It's very fun. But I think that's like, you know, like, I mean, I'm a writer. I've written for like, you know, Looney Tunes on Cartoon Network, shows for Nickelodeon, DreamWorks, Nerdist, a bunch of other places. But like, you know, outside of that, I think that the stuff that I just have the most fun doing are just like big comedy public works projects where I get like 100 people together and we do a crazy thing or whatever, you know?
Yeah, but that feels to me very much like comedy in the age of the internet, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
Right? Yeah, which is really, really interesting. I feel like we, I don't know, it feels like the things that I'm interested in, things that, of course, those that strange generation of young Zoomers, millennials, whatever you want to call them,
yeah.
It definitely seems like I don't know if they will, what the funniest thing that they'll produce will be a stand-up routine. I feel like they are hysterical and also totally hard to describe and bonkers in the way that they, I mean, TikTok, right?
Like, right. I mean,
yeah, I don't know. They have different forms. So I love that your form is really like, you know, you're a great writer, you're a great storyteller, but also, you know, being able to energize a community for like a comedy experience. That's pretty awesome. And I don't know, it feels very of the moment.
I mean, thank you. And that's something with TikTok is like the things that blow up on TikTok are always like challenges, right? Like hashtag whatever challenge. And it's like, it's just like, I feel like people want to participate in something that's like bigger than themselves. And I think that's why like, I'm like, you know, I'm not like necessarily, you know, a stand-up that, you know, kind of hits the roads alone or whatever, because it's just like, that's just not like, like I like creating comedy with groups of people, and like doing it alone is just like not as fun for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, even stand-up is, it's really about being in the same room with someone. And then now that we communicate across so many different types of digital medias, what does that mean to be in the room with people, right?
Right, yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah. Which I mean, and all forms of storytelling like grow and shift and change. And of course I'm like obsessed with how they change across various emerging medias just cause I'm like a nerd.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like thinking about what humor is in like virtual reality, and what is humor in, I mean, I love TikTok. I love the way that Zoomers are so strange. They're like the way that they deep fry messaging, right? So that it's so ephemeral. They take memes and then deep fry them to the point where I can't even understand what they're saying.
Oh yeah, but that's like, I mean, that's something that I love about like, just the internet is, it's like you get to the point of like something is a copy of a copy of a copy. So it is tough to even tell like what was the original reference point of this, you know, like, wait, can I swear on this?
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, it's like, what was the original reference point of like this like drawing of Garfield fucking a dish of lasagna or whatever?
Right? I mean, man, God bless Garfield deep fried memes. I mean, like,
yeah. Which, like, I mean, like, Gorefeld for me, which is, like, Garfield if he was, like, a horror movie monster, which is, like, oh, like, it's, like, you could look at that, and you're, like, okay, I can kind of see the A point here, and I can kind of see the Z point here, but I have no idea what any of the middle letters are, and that's kind of awesome.
I love the like the evolution of Doge. Like I feel like, yeah. Doge was just this very innocent thing. He was kind of dumb, and then he like became a fascist and had a son. Like I don't even.
Oh yeah, totally. Where it's just, or like, you know, like I feel like the Philadelphia Flyers mascot Gritty is another example of that.
Yes.
Where it's like, oh, Gritty just started as a mascot, and now he's just like, you know, a leftist workers' rights icon. It's just like, I mean, you know, I'm a proud follower of the fellow worker Gritty Twitter account. Oh, I'll wave my flag, but it's definitely, yeah. Like, it's definitely like, at what point did he become like the mascot for anti-fascism?
I mean, but I'm so happy. I hope we can. That's what I kind of like about this reappropriationist, like deep fried concept, where you can just be like, yeah. No, sorry, we own this now. This is our mascot. Thanks, though.
But like, I mean, just to take it back to like native terms, it's just like Baby Yoda like becoming indigenous is, mm-hmm, like, that's, mm-hmm, like a big thing on like native Twitter. It's like Baby Yoda's indigenous. Like he's, I don't know, he's a native kid, and it's like, you see so many memes that like sell that, and you see so many like, you know, it's like him being wrapped in a blanket, but it's like photoshopped so the blanket looks like a Pendleton blanket, and it's just like, I don't know at what point Baby Yoda became native, but
well,
like,
and,
I'm
and
all for it.
He almost was adopted by a native actress, right? Like right, that episode,
right.
I'm like blanking on her name. I got to meet her at Sundance. She's amazing. I ran into her at Sundance and I was like, oh my god, you were almost the mom of Baby Yoda. And she's like, yes, I was on that show, and I was almost the mom. And she's Native, right? So I'm like, it's just legitimately true that Baby Yoda's Native. I mean, he was almost even adopted by a Native woman. So, like,
right.
Literally. Oh, so close. He was so close. But in my imagination, I hope that, like, you know, after his whole Mandalorian adventure happens, he goes back to the Native woman that, and she raises him with, like, Tig Notaro. She, like, comes and they, like, co-raise Baby Yoda. You know, it's like a whole thing.
I mean, I'd be on board for that. I feel like Tig Notaro would be, if she's not already in the Mandalorian, she should be in the Mandalorian.
Right? I kind of feel like, yeah. Yeah, that's my dream anyways. It's like a ship, my ship.
That's fun. You should write that fan fiction.
I will just do that. Yeah, obviously. I mean, fan fiction is incredible. What a weird and strange universe. I don't know. I feel like sometimes fan fiction can be some of the weirdest stuff, but it comes from such a place of, like, deep convolutional love, or, you know, whatever. And I feel like a lot of, I don't know, I feel like when I watch a lot of, like, new content for streaming services, I'm always like, I always have, like, a fine line between, was this fan fiction for a different franchise, or was this generated by a neural network in AI? Like, it's always just very, like, I don't know, but I hope both, really, honestly.
So. Well, yeah, I mean, I get what you're talking about. Like, for me, I was thinking about this recently, because I've been on a lot of, like, video game podcasts lately, mm-hmm. about, like, one of my favorite video games is a video game called Final Fantasy VI. It's like an RPG that came out in, like, the mid-90s. And, like, I think that the first story that I ever wrote was, like, I was in elementary school and it was, like, Final Fantasy VI fan fiction or something like that. And it's, like, that for me is, you know, I think that for a lot of writers, it's kind of, like, the building blocks of where you get started a little bit, because it's, like, you can kind of take characters that, like, you feel that you know in your heart, and then just kind of do whatever you want with them. And then, you know, and then ideally that Star Wars fan fiction that you wrote, eventually the characters become, you know, some different fictional universe that you created, but you still kind of use the heart that you, like, put into it. But yeah, it is, I don't know, it's fan fiction is fun to dive into.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's world building, right? I have this friend, his name is Torfi, and he was one of the founders of this thing called Evo Online, which is, like, a big kind of space universe. I don't know. It's a massive multiplayer online universe, yeah. Rather than just, like, just a game, right? They've had their own economic scholars. It's a very strange place. But then he moved on, and now he's the head of Minecraft, right? Which is, like, the same, but for children, right?
Oh, cool.
Like, the same interesting universe. But when he was talking about the creation of this virtual space, he's like, when we first created this world that, you know, thousands and thousands, or I don't even know how many people are on EVE Online. It's like its own country. But he said when they first created it, he felt like they all felt like gods. They're like, oh, we created this universe and this story, and we have this governmental structure and this economic structure, and people are spending their, you know, part of their lives in this space. And then it really quickly moved to the point where they all, he said, felt like janitors, right? Where suddenly they had this one revolt where they like spun up a new story where they slightly changed the story in a significant way, and the participants, players, fans, whatever you want to call it, like, citizens, got so angry that they figured out that if they took all of their spaceships and they shot one fountain on one planet, it would overrun all the systems and shut down the game for everyone. So they organized like thousands of people to take their spaceships and shoot this fountain. And then they're like, all the people who were running the whole game had to be like, okay, well, what are your terms? And they had to kind of create, like, a council of these people that were like, we don't like this story.
I mean, that is something that I love about, like, I definitely follow, like, I haven't played EVE Online, but I definitely just, like, follow the drama of it. Like, I've seen so many just, like, I don't know, like, I've read a lot of point-by-point synopsises of, like, huge wars between factions in EVE Online, and, like, you know, all of these, like, insane, you know, just, like, crazy military maneuvers that are like, oh, this is, like, what, this is a movie, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I guess that, like, it's amazing that they've created a world like that that people are that passionate about, but, like, I totally get your friend deciding to run Minecraft instead. It's just like, oh, that sounds like cool, like cool in some ways, but in other probably larger ways, a nightmare to deal with.
Well, yeah, it's a totally a change, right? Like where you think, oh, I am like an author of a universe. I've created something. And then when it becomes, then at some point it becomes the property of the citizens that live there, right? And it's not your, it's not your story anymore. It's the story of everyone's, you know, epic battles that they're, you know, creating, and you build a world, but it's filled with so many people and their experiences. I don't know. I kind of feel like the way that you work with community is similar to that. It's like, it's like comedy as an MMORPG.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah, which is really cool.
I think that like the umbrella of a lot of this, and this is something that's like kind of shifted how I like kind of like just how I tackle like writing and creativity and things that I'm working on, is like I feel like ultimately people just want to be seen. Like they want to be seen, they want to be acknowledged, they want to be noticed. And like, you know, that can exist in like kind of macro levels of like, you know, comedians who like cats or people that like cats want to be acknowledged as being not crazy cat people or whatever, you know.
Well, and their cats aren't going to acknowledge them, so you know.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's no matter how hard we try. Or like, you know, for natives, it's like, we want to see like native stories in, you know, 2020 seen on screen, because like, then we'll feel like, oh, we feel like, you know, seen by the all seeing eye of media or whatever. And I think that like, when it comes down to TikTok and stuff like that, the reason so many people, you know, especially kids, participate in challenges is it's just like, they just want to be seen as like part of a thing or like acknowledged in really any way. And like, you know, I think that like when that kind of comes in the media, storytelling, things like EVE Online or like Star Wars or whatever, it's just like people kind of, in the same way that we create fan fiction for things, people will like basically create like, here is my, through my mind's eye, what I think Star Wars is. And like, I've built that up in my head. And if somebody does anything that's counter to that, I'll immediately reject it because it's not what I think it is. So it's like, yeah, you know, I mean, all the people that like, kind of revolted on EVE Online, it's like they were basically like taking an active stewardship in like, no, like we need to be, EVE Online needs to be what we think it is, not what you, the creators of EVE Online. Right.
Well, and do you have any examples like some of the comedy projects that you've created that are really about mobilizing the community when something surprised you, or when the participants have sort of done things that you didn't even expect at all?
I guess that like, I mean, like if you want me to talk about drama from my cat Facebook group,
yes.
Oh boy, I will.
Yes.
I mean, that's something that originally I created the cat Facebook group, the LA Neuron Cat Network, just as it was a bit because somebody created a Facebook group originally called the LA Underground Comedy Network, a guy named John Renoitis, that was literally just like for comedians to like promote shows, or like if you have tickets to a sold out show and you're trying to get rid of them or whatever. It's just kind of like, it was a resource for comedy people. And then because we're comedians and we all like to kind of jump on the bit, everybody created Facebook groups that were basically permutations of that. So it was like the LA Underground Hat Network, where it was about hats, or the LA Underground Pun Network, where everybody talked in puns. And I just started posting cat pictures in all these groups until somebody was finally like, hey, you should create an LA Underground Cat Network and stop doing this. And I was like, oh, that's a good idea. So I did. And then it immediately blew up and became the most popular of all of them because people love cats. And so originally it was just created as like a Facebook group for comedians to share pictures of their cats. But like very quickly, people that work at like cat rescues in Los Angeles kind of joined it. And it became also kind of a resource for like people that volunteer at cat rescues and people that are, you know, passionate about, you know, saving cats and getting, you know, cats like trapped, spayed, neutered, stuff like that. So like it is this weird push and pull since it's gotten popular of like comedians and people that just want to look at cute cat pictures getting mad because cat rescue people are posting just like, you know, like sad posts about like, you know, missing cats and stuff, and the need to like, you know, the things that are going on in the cat kind of rescue community. And then people in the cat rescue community are getting mad at comedians because they're like, this cat picture isn't helping cats or whatever.
So
or like a comedian will just post a question that's just like, what cat litter should I give a cat? And then like somebody will be like, I don't know, like Fresh Step is good. And then a bunch of cat rescue people will jump on that and be like, how dare you? The Fresh Step will cause cats to have asthma or whatever. You know, so it is, or like, you know, there's a huge thing where it's just like, hey, I'm getting rid of a bag of like dry cat food. If anybody wants it, they can have it. And then cat rescue people will jump on that and be like, how dare you? You should only feed fresh cat food to cats or whatever.
Oh my God, that's
and then
amazing.
There are like other cat rescue people that will be like, fresh cat food is the worst thing to feed cats. So it's like, it is this thing where like, it's like, and I've even seen people post stuff like, as a like just post, hey, everybody stop posting cute cat pictures. This group was not built for cute cat pictures. It was just built as a resource for like cat rescue people. And then I'll be like the admin and I'll just be like, no, actually as the admin, it was primarily for cute cat pictures. That's literally what it says in the about page for the group, you know? So it's like, it is kind of that push and pull of like trying to kind of like, manage a community of, you know, even 12,000 people in a way that like everybody feels seen, but also like kind of having to step in here and there if like one side is going off the deep end in one direction or the other, you know?
Well, it sounds to me like you have the kind of perfect ecosystem where you have people that can be trolled easily. Both sides, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Both sides can be equally trolled by the other. It seems like a really fair playing field, right? Like, you know, if you're very righteous around saving cats, you can troll other people and you don't even know you're trolling them, which is even better. And then if you're a comedian, you could troll those people. They don't know you're trolling them, and so they will just troll you back. It's great. This is like perfectly balanced sitcom right here.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've definitely already written a sitcom that's basically about this group. But yeah, it is, I guess it's just, it's interesting in that like, you know, I'm not like everything that I do are kind of just like based in goofs and stuff, but it's like, oh, this is what being like a community organizer would be. It's just that like, instead of organizing people for like, you know, like, actual things that matter, I'm you know, organizing people on like cat pictures and
hey,
goofs,
cat
you know.
Pictures matter. Okay. Yeah, yeah. They matter. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you for seeing me.
Yeah,
I appreciate
that. I see
that.
You. I too am very inspired by cat photos. I feel like every Slack that I'm a part of has a cat channel, and I share there. That's where I share myself. So
I feel like every Slack that I enter into, if they do not have a cat channel, they very quickly get a cat channel.
Exactly. I will like look for it. If I don't find it, I create it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's necessary. You know, my cat does so much good in the world. She doesn't realize it. The angrier faces she makes, it's even a better photograph. So,
aww,
you know. So tell me about your cats. I would love to know about you.
Oh, actually, this is going to be very controversial. I actually don't have any cats.
Doesn't have any cats. Do you want a cat?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, of course. I'm right now. I live with a roommate who's not really a cat person, and I don't want to like force cats on somebody who doesn't like cats. And then you know, in addition to that, just like working in the entertainment industry, like, you know, right now I'm, you know, sleeping 15 hours a day and organizing bits or whatever.
So you are the cat of your family.
Yeah, I am a cat. Yeah. I became a cat.
That's fair.
But you know, it's like when I'm working on jobs, it's like your schedule is really inconsistent. So it's like there might be days where I'm gone, you know, for 18 hours a day, just, you know, with bits and stuff like and jobs and things. So it's like, you know, if I have one cat, I don't want to like have the cat feel lonely because I can't necessarily pay attention to it to a ton. But like, you know, the solution to that, of course, would be to get two cats. But if I have a roommate that's like not a cat person, I don't want to force like two cats on something.
So you could get like seven and then, yeah.
I mean, I've already had this conversation of like, what I should do is get seven cats and have them replace my roommate.
Right. I mean, cats are so bad at paying rent. I mean, it's true. But, you know,
we're in the middle of a rent freeze. So I think that, you know, they've got a couple of months to figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. You know, everybody needs a chance to get on their feet. And, you know, seven cats, that's already an act. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And cats have more than 2 feet. So like, you know, they need extra time to get in the middle of it.
Exactly.
But yes, I wish I had cats. But one nice thing about the cat Facebook group is that people in the group, I think, know that I don't have cats. So I have a lot of like standing offers from friends of just like, you can come over to my place and pet my cat if you want.
Aww. That's really good.
And I get a lot of offers to like cat sit when people are out of town and stuff like that. So it's, I don't know, people are definitely, I get my cat fixed, don't you worry.
Well, that's good. I mean, I feel like with this quarantine, sheltering in place and everything else, here in San Francisco Bay Area, my cat was very excited for like the first 2 days, you know, and then now she just glares at me and is like, you're still in my house, you know, like didn't, you know, you used to be like a part-time roommate. Now you're still here. So she's finding more and more unique places to hide, like in the laundry basket, under all the clothes at the very bottom, you know, like you kind of just, it's like, surprise, there's a cat. Cause she's trying to, yeah, she's over it. She's like, it's definitely you. And not me, you know.
That's very funny.
But yeah, I wonder if all the cats across the, well, at least California is now all shelter in place, so maybe, I don't know, California cats are probably about to get really weird. I've been hearing things from my friends that their cats are all acting really weird. I'm like, yeah, who would have thought? They're really committed to the bit of not caring, not showing us that they care if we're there or not, but turns out that we annoy them, so.
But not in the right way.
I mean, they care. They're just like, oh. Well, you know, we'll figure it out. We'll figure out how to like cohabitate with our cats, or not. Yeah,
just like draw, paint a line down the side of the room. Just treat it like a roommate.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah. It's good. They yell a lot. She'll like, I'll be asleep in the bed and she'll run. I can hear the like pitter patter from halfway across the apartment, and she'll run and then dive bomb onto me on the bed and then just like bite me through the covers and then just run away again. And I'm like, what?
Oh, that's a fun game.
I mean, she never used to do that before, but now she's like, you're still here. It's okay.
It's like, I feel like that's just cats. Like my, when I first moved to Los Angeles, I moved in with my brother. He doesn't work in the entertainment industry. He's just like a car mechanic or something. And like I moved in with him and just like slept on his couch for my first couple of years. And he had two cats when I moved in. And like, I definitely felt for the first couple of days that like the larger cat was trying to establish that it was higher than me in the pecking order. So it's like, just cause I was, you know, unemployed, fresh college grad, and I was home a lot. Like, and it, I remember, like, I would wake up, like, I opening my eyes to seeing the cat, and then within a second, it would, like, lunge through my throat.
Oh, my God.
Or, like, I think I woke up to it, like, biting my eye once.
Oh, my God.
And it's just, like, I definitely felt like, oh, this is this cat being, like, okay, just because there's a new person, I'm establishing that, like, I'm still the alpha.
Yeah. Or they're just psycho. That's what's so hard to tell. I mean, yeah. Yeah, they try to be dominant, but then they're also, it's also just, I wonder if it's just funny to them, you know?
Yeah. I feel like cats understand bits.
Oh, definitely. I mean, if I laugh at my cat, she is like devastated. She will like hide, you know, if I like, she does something weird and I find it funny and laugh, then she just like walks really low to the ground in this like slinky way and then like hides. She's like embarrassed. So I have to like try to laugh on the inside, you know.
That's very funny.
So how did you get into comedy from the time when a cat was biting your eyeball and you were an undergrad? What did it for you?
my story is like really like, you know, weird and specific, where growing up, like, I knew that I liked making people laugh, but, like, because there weren't any natives on TV or, like, prominent native comedians, I didn't think I was, like, allowed to work in comedy. So, like, I went to school to be just, like, a small market TV weather guy instead, because I was like, oh, they get to, like, crack jokes and stuff on TV. And then kind of, like, right as I was about to graduate, a bunch of my professors kind of pulled me aside, and they kind of saw, like, kind of saw what I was thinking, and they kind of gave me the suggestion of like, oh, you know, you could just work in comedy, right? Which was very shocking to me as a 25-year-old at the time. And they kind of like introduced me to a bunch of like alumni in Los Angeles that like kind of worked as, you know, producers and writers and stuff like that. So, you know, I moved to LA kind of at like a lot of their suggestions, and then pretty quickly, I got my first assistant job assisting the guys that created the show Scare Tactics on Sci-Fi. And they were really nice. And they kind of, you know, gave me a lot of advice of like, what are the good comedy theaters to get involved in? And like, how do people kind of get their start as comedians now? So that led to me getting really involved in a place called the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, which was, because they shut down because of the coronavirus. Maybe they'll reopen, who knows? They kind of like led to me to get involved as a sketch comedian there. And like, they're a place that Saturday Night Live and a lot of other places kind of use as a farm league. So, you know, I just hustled in that community for a while, and like, that kind of like led to me, you know, getting on house teams there. And then like, that led to me just like, you know, getting hired by friends that I'd done comedy with at, you know, various, you know, TV shows, websites and stuff like that. And I still get most of my jobs from like friends that I did or have done comedy with, you know. It's just, yeah. It's sort of like, you know, the phrase, it's not what you know, it's who you know, is definitely a thing in Los Angeles, but I don't think it's as like nepotistic as people think it is. It's sort of like, you know, who are you, if you're like writing on a show, who are you going to want to write with? Are you going to want to write with like somebody that you don't know, so you don't necessarily know what their sense of humor is or like how they are in a writer's room? Or are you going to write with somebody that you like ate something gross with on stage at 1 a.m. in a comedy show in front of five people? You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I don't really think there's any field that's any different, right? Like at all, like even computer programming, right? Like it doesn't matter what it is. It's, you know, you've worked with someone in some capacity before, and then you want to work with that same person, 'cause you know, there's a lot of like lame people out there. So.
Yeah. But it is a lot of like, it's just like, if you were friends with somebody, you can probably verify that they're not annoying to be in a writer's room with for 14 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, that is the thing of like, somebody can have a really good writing sample, but it's like, you don't necessarily know if they're like, you know, somebody that you could stand to be in the same room with for 12 hours a day for 6 months or whatever, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I think that's like, I totally get it. It allows you to prove the, at least, is this person annoying to be with for long periods of time test.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I that's awesome that you brought up UCB, because I think I had like a very dumb sketch comedy group in my undergrad. And I think every single one of us from that group, you know, like moved to New York City. I'm from New York City, so I moved home, but everyone who wasn't like moved to New York City and joined, you know, UCB and became part of that scene. You know, like in the early 2000s, and that was really, it's really been a great space in all of the locations that they have. And I saw that you actually worked to bring a scholarship for Native comedians at UCB in LA, is that right?
Yeah, so I, kind of my backstory is that like, coming up through UCB, you know, getting on house teams, directing shows, like doing all the stuff, like I feel like I've probably, you know, checked off all the boxes of things that you can do at UCB at this point. Something that I noticed, like, after I'd been doing it for a couple of years, is that I was, like, the only Native person. And, you know, that, like, I've also, like, since I moved here, been really involved in Native Hollywood. So, like, I have a lot of friends that, like, you know, Native voices and various Native film festivals and things. And, you know, I know a lot of really funny Native comedians and Native actors and Native writers that I just didn't really see getting a lot of opportunities at like kind of the mainstream comedy theaters. So that's been, you know, just as somebody who's like, you know, at this point, for lack of a better term, like an elder statesman in the community or whatever, I've definitely tried to like use my position having a foot in the door to like try to bring as many Natives in through the door as I can. So like the way that manifested itself is like about 2 years ago, so 2018, I put together the first ever showcase of Native American comedians at UCB. And like UCB's been a thing for 20 years, the first time they'd ever had a show that's all Natives. And it was on Columbus Day, because when else would it be? It was called the Ghost of Christopher Columbus Theater Smudging Spectacular.
Oh, that's such a good name.
The premise of it was that every year on Columbus Day, the ghost of Columbus rises from his grave to terrorize Natives. And the only thing that can scare him back to hell are jokes from Native comedians.
Obviously.
Yeah. And look, as we all look, every Native knows this, as we all know. Like, you know, it was great. It was a standing room only sellout. And, you know, it got a lot of Natives who had never been able to perform on the main stage at UCB kind of that that resume line item and that experience. And then we did it a second time last year, and it was another sellout. And then the day before Thanksgiving, we did an all-native improv show that was called You're Welcome. And that was the first time that I'd ever done like an all-native improv show at UCB. And, you know, that's basically just been something that I've like tried to use my experience and like position in the community to get opportunities for natives. So like another way that kind of extends itself is like UCB's had like a diversity scholarship where they basically give, you know, kind of like students from marginalized backgrounds, you know, free scholarships and free access to classes. Classes are usually like $500 each. And that's another deal where it's like, oh, I noticed that like not a ton of natives that I knew had ever gotten the scholarship. So like, I kind of, you know, did what I can to meet with the person who was in charge of that, to sit on that committee and like, you know, read essays, sit in on interviews to like, just make sure that like natives are getting those opportunities too. And, you know, definitely like since I've been involved, I've noticed that like a ton more natives have applied. You know, I've noticed that like, since I started doing the all native comedy show, more natives have applied for the scholarship, literally listing in their scholarship application that like, they didn't think that they could do comedy, but they saw a show with a bunch of natives on stage. So now they felt like they could give comedy a try. That's so awesome. It's like, you know, stuff like that for me is like,
I mean, to be fair, like, they can still be weather people too, right?
Like, they can still be weather people. That's fine. That's fine. Yeah, you can be weather people. that's my goal, is to get a native local news weather guy. you know, it's just like, that's kind of outside of just, you know, comedy and bits I'm doing and stuff that I'm writing. That's become just like, you know, a cause that I've been really passionate about and something that I've really tried to kind of like do what I could to work toward. And it's been really cool to like watch the progression of it. Like, since I've started doing that show, I mean, like, a bunch of people have gotten like, a bunch of funny native comedians have gotten like staffed on TV shows and have gotten, you know, cast in big roles on TV shows directly because people went to that show and they were like, oh, this native person is very funny. Like, I should have them be a writer on this show or an That's actor awesome. On this thing or whatever.
That's really cool.
Thank you. I mean, you know, yeah. It's like maybe the comedy community is dead after the coronavirus has caused every comedy theater to close. But before it closed, I got natives on stage.
Oh, yeah. Well, and oh, man, I mean, you know, all anyone's doing right now is like, you know, working, sheltering in place and like binging all types of entertainment. And so yeah. I feel like we're just in a different phase. We're just going to be moving online for a minute. But yeah, I don't think there's anyone who's like not doesn't have a desperate need to laugh and be connected to people. So
that's kind of what I figure too, is like, you know, just in terms of like the entertainment industry, it's like Netflix is doing gangbusters right now, so they're going to keep making shows until the end of the world or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
it's just like, you know, it is just among a lot of my friends, there's definitely a lot of uncertainty. Like, you know, like I said earlier, I definitely, you know, was working on a show that shut down because of coronavirus. But, and like, that's the story of, I think, pretty much everybody in the entertainment industry right now. But it's like, you know, people are still going to need to laugh and people are going to still need entertainment. So I'm sure that like, for folks like us, it's like, it's an uncertain couple weeks or couple months or whatever, yeah. But things will go back to normal at some point, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hope so. It's a strange time. It's weird. Like, we live in California, right? So it's like really gorgeous and beautiful and sunny. And, but yeah, I feel like we're in like winter mode, right? We're in like, you know, hanging out in the house because there's, I mean, I guess you'd never feel like that in LA, huh? Is that?
we don't necessarily have like, oh, it, you know, we're snowed in or whatever.
Right.
But I guess that the equivalent of that in LA is that around wintertime specifically, like, there's about 3 weeks from like the first week of December to probably the first week of January where just the industry shuts down because it's like everybody kind of wants, you know, a break for Christmas. So it does feel like it's just that, where it's just like, you know, like I had a couple of deadlines on Wednesday, which was 2 days ago, that like, were originally for the Friday before that. And I was like, yeah, they're not going to film this for months. It's fine. I can, you know, it's like, I feel like deadlines slip a little bit kind of around that time of the year. Cause people are just like, yeah, whoever I email this to is not going to look at it for a month anyway. So it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah.
I mean, are you experiencing that in your industry at all?
I think a lot less so. You know, I work for a tech startup. There is nothing in our entire company, I feel like, that almost anyone does that couldn't be done remotely. And we have right. entire teams that were already remote. We have, you know, a lot of people on my team have never not been remote. Like, they've been remote for years and they fly in, you know, maybe once a month. And so now that's the only difference, is that they don't have to get on a plane and fly in, which, yeah, you know, I don't know if they really cared in the first place.
Right.
I've just done it to like be nice or something. But, so yeah, and I have a huge half of my team that's in Berlin. And so I only ever see them on Zoom, and it's a very normal thing to kind of like, you know, be Slacking them and Zooming them. And so it's the only different feeling I feel is that I used to go into the office, you know, a couple days a week, totally just so that I could mess around during lunch and like chat with people and get gossip. Like, that was like the only reason,
right?
You know, everything I could, you know, like my boss time and time again was like, you know, you don't ever have to go into the office. Cause I would be like, hey, can I work from home? He's like, you know, I don't actually care. Really. Like, it doesn't matter.
Right.
So yeah, so I missed that, but then it's also hilarious all the different things that people are trying to like fill that gap. Like, I had a group of friends from New York do like a virtual happy hour where we all drink alcohol on Zoom while chatting about stuff. I did one that was like my son ran a Dungeons and Dragons campaign using Tabletop Simulator and Discord, and we were all trying to do that, and it was like many levels of total chaos because like everyone's like delayed, and then like, I hear a delay, wait, do you hear the delay, you know? It's like totally crazy. And then I've tried this other thing that people are really into, which is like co-working on Zoom, where they're just like, oh, just turn it on and then leave it on all day. And I'm like, what? I don't know. It's really weird. Like, I don't like that part where people can just like look at me, like pick my nose while I'm coding or something. I don't know. It's weird. So I don't know. Those right. are different things we've tried to like fill the gap of our like lunch gossip. So we're trying to up the gossip level in other digital forms. It's harder, definitely harder.
Yeah, I guess it's like what office drama could exist if people aren't in the office? So like, I feel like this is a real dark ages for gossip, is what I'm saying.
I know, it's rough. I'm trying to just like throw fits just to help everyone out, you know?
That's fun. I get that.
Like, I must have slacked like 10 people because I had to take this timed test to get the certification, and I text all these people just so that they could be in on the drama. Like, I have an hour to take this test, and they're like, oh my god. And then halfway through I'm like, I don't even know if I'm gonna finish. And then everyone's like, oh my god. And then at the end I'm like, I barely succeeded, and everyone's like, oh my god. So, you know, I'm trying to like fabricate stuff here, you know.
Oh, that's
like very there's I'm trying to find drama where there should be none.
Oh, I get that. That sounds very healthy.
Maybe they will just be like, yeah, I don't know, maybe get fired. I don't know. But it's, yeah, I'm trying to like, you know, it's, I feel like it's like, that's my job as a coworker. I have to have a little drama. I don't know quite yet how to do that telematically.
I feel like there is a thing among like, you know, comedy people, and definitely like, you know, yourself included, of like, it's, I feel like we're getting like cabin fever in a way of like, we're so used to just doing bits that it's like, it's sort of like, you know, even like creating your own drama, it's just like, oh, I'm just bored and need to make something.
Yeah.
Like I'm seeing a friend of mine who's like, he's like a longtime TV writer. He's been a TV writer for like 30 years. He's like, you know, like a former, he's like a head writer, showrunner guy. So he's like a top level TV writer. Like, I on Facebook, it's interesting to see even somebody of that level just like every day do a new Facebook post that's just like, hey, so like I can't have fast food right now because restaurants are closed, but like I can come up with parody names of fast food restaurants that are themed after the coronavirus. Number one, Pandemic Express. And it's just like, oh, even like that, so guy's good. Getting cabin fever.
Oh yeah. Oh no, I'm like, I have like, I mean, I follow very strange people on Instagram, you know, it's just like my thing. But I have like, I also like to follow different supermodels because their lives are strange to me and really entertaining. And they are getting super cabin fever, but they also have these like very fabulous lifestyles. So you get to watch them in their Hollywood mansion unpacking like a $7,000 chair, but then they're trying to put it together themselves. You know? But I'm just like mesmerized. I'm like, this is amazing content.
Yeah, that is. Did you see the, actually, yeah, I don't know, I'll talk about this publicly. Did you see like the Gal Gadot Imagine video?
No.
Okay, so it's getting roasted a lot on Twitter. Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman, she put together a video that she posted on her social media of a bunch of celebrities all singing the song Imagine by the Beatles together. And it's like every celebrity does like a different kind of lyric, and it does another line in the song or another, you know, beat stanza or whatever. And it's like Sarah Silverman's doing it, like, you know, Gal Gadot, like, you know, Seth Rogen, et cetera, et cetera. And like, you could tell that like in their mind, they were like, oh, this is a way to like, you know, help the nation heal, to show that like we're all in this together. But like Twitter's reaction to that was definitely like, hey, you assholes, you're telling us all to get along while you're clearly in your well-stocked mansion.
So good. Oh,
like,
my God.
Like, it definitely reads as, and, you know, I don't know any of these people personally, so I can't speak on them as people, but, like, it definitely feels like, hey, you poors, you'll be...
We will be fine if we just imagine. I'm, well, you know, it's incredible. Like Yoko Ono, I've followed her every iteration of social media. She's really on top of it. She's like, boom, she has an Instagram like the week it comes out. Yeah. She's had Twitter, you know. And I think like one of the first, I don't know, 10 or 20 posts that she posted on Instagram was just a photo from her apartment that overlooks, you know, the Imagine Park in Central Park. It's just this massive bay window, and all you can see is the entirety of Central Park. And she's like, just imagine. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't imagine what it would be like to live in that apartment.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is just like, you know, like I get the, you know, the point of that message is just like, yeah, I don't know, let's all remember the Beatles or whatever. But it's also like, it's tough to remember the Beatles when you're like living paycheck to paycheck, and like seeing these huge bay windows over Central Park.
Yeah.
Does not make me feel better. It makes me feel like, you know, not eat the rich, but you know, it's like that level of like.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, it definitely has like this surreal quality to me. I mean, I'm someone who like deeply, I have like maybe, I don't know, a sick enjoyment of like some incredibly stupid things. Like they make me so happy. I love them. So I'm definitely going to look up this Imagine, because that I will love it. I know I will. Because I'll just be like, oh God.
It'll make you feel the same way as that Yoko Ono Instagram post of like, it's like, oh, that's like, the gesture is nice, but it's like, it's sort of like a rich person throwing like silver dollars from a Zeppelin to like, but it's just like, I don't know. It's just like, there is a level of like, yes, even I am helping poor people forget.
So good. Oh man. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I just hope we keep getting quality content like this. You know, that is the content that I want to see. But I also want to see, like, you know, all of the rest of amazing, like, I don't know, like, that's the kind of content that I'm going to laugh at, right? I
mean, right.
And then I have, you know, like, my awesome other friends that their quality content is, like, all of them, you know, dancing in their driveway 6 feet apart from all of their neighbors to, you know, Britney Spears songs, and then driving around and getting, you know, N95 masks from everyone in the, you know, entire area of Silver Lake so they can give them to hospitals. So like, you know, it's like, I know my pores are gonna help me out with quality content that's gonna touch my soul. So I appreciate that celebrities aren't gonna let us down. With making us laugh, so
yeah, like, don't worry, no matter what happens, there will, these multi-millionaire celebrities will be fine, don't
right worry. And they're gonna make me laugh, which I appreciate.
right
which I know is part of, and that's maybe beside the point, but I appreciate it, so.
Yeah, very nice of
them. Oh God, that's so good, that is excellent. I mean, I feel like we're gonna get a lot more, like it's only just begun. I hope it gets even crazier, you know?
Oh yeah, this is like this is day one of the California, like, you know, shelter in place rule or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, just like, what's day six gonna be?
Right. Yeah. No, I've already heard people, like, at least because I follow just so many diverse people on Instagram. I've already seen people who are like, sorry, everyone, I am definitely going to quarantine to one of my other three houses, and I'm not going to be in the one that's like in LA anymore. And I'm like, oh, that's so awesome. I hope they show it on Instagram. I don't know. It just gets really exciting. I like seeing, I don't know, there's something weird about seeing people's homes. And I do like that we're now getting more of that content. Before I had to like solely rely on Britney Spears to see her house like that, but she has really quality house content.
Oh, good, good, good.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's like exceptional. Yeah, I don't know, I like people in their house on Instagram. It's great.
Oh, I get that. You're about to see, I mean, this is a golden age of that.
I know, this is like my moment. I'm so excited. I mean, that and when Britney Spears quotes Nietzsche, which is also excellent, so.
Oh, that sounds fun. I haven't seen that, but sounds fun.
Very worthwhile. So yeah. what is some of the things that are entertaining you that you're finding funny besides the Imagine collaboration, which possibly the best thing I've heard about ever?
Okay, so this is going to be hyper specific, but I'm excited to talk about it. I'm a really big fan of professional wrestling. Like, I've been watching since I was a kid. And yeah, we're in a point now where, like, you know, any mass gatherings of over 10 people are kind of like recommended to not do. So, like, you know, live wrestling events aren't going to be performed in front of an audience of 20,000 people in an arena right now. But so many of these professional wrestling companies still have weekly TV deals. So they still have to like do a weekly show in front of an audience of nobody. Like, it's really interesting to watch how different companies kind of lean into it. Like, one of my favorites right now is a new company called All Elite Wrestling. And everybody that runs All Elite Wrestling are all in their 30s. So they definitely, like, lean into the fact that there isn't an audience. They, like, they do stuff that, like, makes it less awkward. But World Wrestling Entertainment, they're kind of, like, the top dogs right now. They're very blissfully unaware of how weird it is to have a wrestler come out and then pose on the entranceway to an audience of zero people.
Oh, it's so good.
So like they had Stone Cold Steve Austin back on Monday.
I love him so much. So thank you for mentioning him. Thank you.
He's great. And like they had Stone Cold Steve Austin back, and like something that he's famous for is like, you know, drinking beers in the middle of the ring, and like the audience, and like he pours it all over himself, and the audience always cheers really loud. But like him doing that in front of an audience of nobody, where you can literally hear in a quiet room him quietly opening a beer can before doing it.
That's amazing.
The funniest. Because it's like, it really takes the mystique of him away, because you're just like, oh, this is just a guy in his mid-50s just quietly drinking two beers alone in the center of a ring.
Oh my God, who knew we needed that? I need that. That's amazing.
And they even, like, it's become a weird surrealist art in a way, to the point where it's like, one of his catchphrases is that he always says, give me a hell yeah, and then the audience says back, hell yeah. Like, he did that during his promo on Monday, and he did it as if there was an audience there, and the camera panned over to an audience of no one, and then he kept doing it.
See, that man knows how to do a bit.
Yeah. But it's like, but he wasn't playing it like it was a bit. He was playing it like he normally does. It's just the production was in on the bit. So it's like, it just becomes this weird, absurdist art in a way that I don't think professional wrestling often is, but I love.
Yeah, and we are ready for that. I mean,
yeah.
For sure. Oh, yeah. Wrestling is such, I mean, that is such a great, I don't know, performance form in every way. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to start watching wrestling again because that's amazing. Yeah, I usually only watch it when I'm in hotels, which I'm not in anymore lately.
Right. For some weird reason.
But I travel so much that I'm like, I haven't even noticed that I haven't watched wrestling in 3 weeks, but it's like, oh yeah, because I haven't traveled in 3 weeks. But yeah, usually that's my favorite thing to watch in hotel rooms because obviously, you know.
Yeah, I get what you're talking about. It's like on constantly, so it should be reliable. Like, oh, it'll probably be on when you're in a hotel room.
Yeah. And then you just like put it on and I like lay there and I'm just like very happy. It's like, yeah. You know, I have my friends near me. So yeah, that's my go-to hotel watching. Yeah, that or SVU, you know?
Great.
It's good. You know, you need carnage of some kind. So.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that with me. I'm going to go binge that. I don't have live TV, but I'm sure there's a place I can find it live.
Oh, don't worry. There are short videos on YouTube of Stone Cold Steve Austin quietly drinking beer in the center of a ring.
Oh, thank goodness. Oh.
But he's still like spilling it on himself, so it's not like he's enjoying it. He's just a man in his 50s dumping beer on himself alone. Where it's just like, oh, clear this man has a problem.
But that's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is how he enjoys it, right?
Yes, he drinks beer through the top of his head.
Right? Like, yeah, he's like a chinchilla where they take the little dust bath and then they fluff up and then they just like spin around. You know, he's just like with beer.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like that's a fair comparison.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Well, I hope that you have a good time during your shelter in place. I guess that's just started in LA.
I mean, it's just started in LA, but I've definitely like tried to kind of practice it over the past week or so. So like, that's kind of my, my big dream for the next week is that I live very close to a lot of really good friends of mine. And we're basically doing that thing. I'm sure that you're probably, you know, awaiting this too, where it's like, once we all self-quarantine for like, you know, a week or two, then we can self-quarantine together in essentially self-quarantine pods, because we're like, if we're aware that none of us has it, then we can hang out with each other.
Totally. I've already started having people offer to do that, but then I'm all like, how do I know?
Oh, yeah. I feel the same way, where it's like, I'm definitely going to have a real conversation with all of my friends before I go over to their house and invite them to my house. That's just like, wait, who have you hung out with over the past
week? I know. And suddenly I feel like really scandalous and I don't know how to talk about it. But then it's also like, not like it's unknown, you know, like someone will be like, hey, like last week someone invited me to their house for dinner. And I'm like, no, we're like supposed to shelter in place. And they're like, yeah, but, and I'm like, oh, I feel weird now. Like, I don't know.
I ran into the exact same thing. The people that I live near, we go on a lot of like kind of shelter in place, you know, social distance walks where it's just nice. Like, you know, we walk around the block, but we're like 6 feet away from each other or whatever. And, but like afterwards, like one of my friends was like wrestling was about to be on. And I was like, oh, I'm about to go watch wrestling. And my friend was like, oh, cool. Is it cool if I like come over and watch it? And I was like, yeah, like, you know, like I want you to, but it's like, I don't know, we should probably wait like 12 days before we do this. Also, like, I don't know what my roommate situation is. We could be like stealth carriers or whatever, you know.
It's like the most awkward thing. I mean, I've never had any more awkward conversations since, like, you know, we had to use condoms when you're like 13. You have to learn about it in school, and they're like this condom thing. You're like, oh God, how am I ever going to talk about that? But then you figure it out, and then you have a freaking pandemic, and you're like, I have no idea how to talk about these things. Where you're like, well,
yeah.
No.
Well, it's like it is the like, look, I mean, like, it's not you, it's me. But maybe it's you.
It's probably both of us. Actually, mostly just you. Because why are you asking me? Follow the rules.
Yeah. Just like that. Like that. You want to ignore the rules in this situation makes me definitely want to say no.
Right, exactly. Oh my God, exactly. I feel it's like I'm having middle school panic all over again. Is this the reality? That's why I'd like, thank goodness for the mayors that come out and are like, guys, these are the rules, because I'm like, there you go, it's not me, just it's the mayor. And they're like, we don't have to listen to the mayor, Amelia. I'm like, oh God, I'm like the most rule following nerd you ever met in your life. So it just makes me panic. But
I feel like in this situation that's probably for the best.
Maybe. I'm going to have no friends when I get out of this pandemic. Yeah. Well, I'll have the other like nerds like me, which, you know what, is where I started anyways. So,
yeah, I'm not super worried about it. I'm checking in with my friends a lot more. I'm in a lot of like group chats and Facebook chats where it's just like, you know, daily, like, hey, how's everybody holding up? Like, you know, that is something that's really nice to see out of this is like, you know, going back to something we talked about earlier, it's just like, it definitely feels like, at least in my case, a lot of like community stuff. So like I'm in a Facebook group that's just comedians that live in kind of my specific neighborhood of Los Angeles. And like I'm getting a lot of, you know, like if somebody's going to the store, they definitely message everybody and are like, I'm about to go to the store. Does anybody need anything? You know, so that only one person's going out and not 12 people are going out.
That's awesome.
You know, and then they just drop it off on your doorstep so that you don't have to like talk to them or touch them or anything. And then, you know, we all of course get the stuff and then we panic wash it under our sink. cover it and corral before we need it or whatever. But it's like, you know, I do feel like, at least in my case, communities of people are coming together to like help each other out, and you know, we're gonna get through this.
I felt I don't know, all of my friends have been really wonderful, my coworkers have been really wonderful. It's really great to not be alone going through through this and having a community. I used to really, I moved to the Bay Area somewhat recently from Brooklyn, and in the Bay Area they have Nextdoor, which I don't know if you have that in LA, probably.
Not on it, but I hear that especially now it would probably be very fun to be on.
It's bonkers. They don't have it in New York, so I never had heard of it, and I moved here and everyone's like, oh, you should get on Nextdoor, and I'm like, what is that? And they're like, well, it's like the drama of Facebook, but it's people that are next door to you or like in your same building. I'm like, whoa, that's amazing. So so it's incredible. I highly recommend it, because it's like definitely the level of drama of Facebook, but then they're yelling at somebody who, you know, is walking their dog, and then you realize, wait, that was me, or, you know what I mean? It's really great. But it's really high panic level, at all times. So through the pandemic, it's actually been, it's like, it couldn't get any more panic. So now it's just kind of like, it's having its perfect moment, I think is what I'm trying to say, but highly recommend, very entertaining. Yeah, people seem to be coming together there to either admonish and shame each other or to help each other out. So,
yeah, I'm sure there's probably on my Nextdoor app like some post that's just like, why are all these people going on walks? Like,
oh yeah, and you know, they're like, I don't understand why the homeless are exempt from the shelter. You know, like, it's all, you get levels, cool. Levels of people.
So. Well, yeah, you get stuff like that. That's just like, I guess it's like, it just lets you know like how dumb your neighbors are.
Oh yeah, which is really great. Like, I appreciate it, especially as someone who's new to the area. I feel like in New York, I already knew, you know, how dumb my neighbors were, but here, it was great. It was like a good quick start.
Right.
Yeah, so highly recommend that.
Great.
Yeah, that's what I got. thank you so much for chatting with me for so long. Is there anything else you wanted to share with the audience or with me?
No, I think that, I mean, I don't know. I think that, I feel like this conversation has been a very, very well plotted road. We've gone the straight line the entire way.
Absolutely.
I don't know, I guess like, follow me on Twitter at Joey Tainment. Follow me on Instagram at Joey Clift. The reason that it's Joey Clift with like five I's is that a 12-year-old took regular Joey Clift. So now I just got to settle with the scraps. And then I guess, like, you know, wash your hands and stay 6 feet away from people if you're listening to this during the quarantine.
Yeah,
I'll promote
6 feet away from both of us. You know.
So yeah, I'm going to promote just like soap. Soap is, I think, a good thing to promote right now.
Yeah, and I hear you have a casino that you might be performing at soon.
Oh yeah. I mean, unfortunately, like, look, Alani's shut. They're doing a good thing, and they're not open during the pandemic. But look, after this, if you're like near Portland and you want to gamble, go to the Alani Casino. It's 20 minutes north of Portland in Southern Washington. It's a great casino. I don't know. So if you're listening to this after the pandemic, go lose money in my tribe's casino, please.
Amazing. Thank you so much for chatting with me. And I can't wait to be part of your Twitter takeover with Tikubar. That's going to be amazing. So thanks.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Thanks again. Yeah. And I'm excited excited that you're going to write a song for my weird.
I mean, obviously. Yeah. Oklahoma.
Yay. Thank you. I don't think we have Oklahoma pitches yet, so that would be really helpful.
You'll get a lot of natives.
Yeah, that's kind of like,
we'll all do in Oklahoma.
I mean, that is, I guess, a specific thing that, like, it's something that I've also been, like, really cognizant of, is, like, I feel like for a lot of people, it's, like, they don't think that they're allowed to do something unless they're asked to do it, or, like, so, like, this is something where, like, I've specifically, like, reached out to a ton of natives, because, like, even though I posted about this publicly on Twitter, it's, like, that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, somebody's going to like reach out past or skip past it and think that they like can do it. So like, yeah, if Oklahoma is entirely a native album, I would be very excited about that.
Same. Yeah. That would be rad. All right. Awesome. Well, I hope you have a great weekend in your sheltering in place.
Thanks. Yeah. You too. Yeah. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Yeah, you've been sheltering in place for like a week now, right?
Yeah.
Okay, do you have any tips for me as somebody who's day one of shelter in place for like day six of shelter in place?
Yeah, definitely. You know, you gotta make your roommate right now realize that you are in it with them. Because they're gonna really not like you, just because. And also, walks are amazing. Obviously, you've already been doing the walking with friends. But yeah, maybe like some peace offerings to the roommate, just preemptively, because I feel like my son is definitely disowned me and my cat hates me. So, but you know, yeah, I'm
great.
But other than that, yeah, video games, Zelda Breath of the Wild. It's never too late to replay that game. So.
Oh yeah, I've been playing a lot of XCOM 2. I didn't play it when it first came out, and now I'm getting into it, so it's great.
Amazing. Animal Crossing came out today, so you know.
Oh yeah, that's big news all over Twitter. I think that the peace offering that I should give my roommate is 7 cats.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That way you can look at him and be like, "You're replaceable. Just remember that."
Yeah. I can train these cats to talk.
These cats are literally mining Bitcoin. Okay, so
right.
Yeah, even though that's not worth anything anymore, but you know, it's something.
Oh yeah, that was yeah. But yeah, thanks for having me. This was super fun.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, have a great weekend.
Oh, you too. Bye.
All right, bye.